Bulimia sucks, but you don't, and here's why. The Bulimia Sucks podcast with Kate Hudson Hall will teach you how to begin breaking through the multitude of thoughts, feelings, triggers, and urges to empower yourself to change your painful behaviors completely. You will hear proven strategies and solutions to help you in your recovery, including real interviews with real people. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon. And now, another episode of Bulimia Sucks, the podcast.
Hello, my name is Kate Hudson Hall, and thank you for listening to Bulimia Sucks. And these are real stories from people who are suffering or have suffered an eating disorder. And it's a platform for people to share relatable, uplifting and inspiring conversations based on bulimia and anorexia and other eating disorders, their victories and challenges. And episodes will include their personal stories of where they are now and their difficult journeys and their steps taken into recovering from their eating disorder. Now, our guest today is Natalie Swanson. And Natalie is an established health and recovery coach who specializes in recovery of diabetics and diabulimia, which is an eating disorder in which people with type 1 diabetes deliberately give themselves less insulin than they need to in order to lose weight. So after years of her own battles with diabulimia, and facing life-challenging complications, she decided enough was enough and began her own recovery journey. She now helps others in recovery, stay in recovery with her Balanced Diabetic Program, where creating mindful and long-lasting habits, incorporating mindset change, in other words, to change the way one sees recovery and to stay in recovery, thus creating a balanced life with diabetes. So welcome, Natalie. Thank you so much for joining us. This is
great. Well,
thank
you so much for having me. Yes, I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great to have you on the show. Let's start off with a funny story.
So yeah,
a good funny story for us to begin with.
Of course. Well, this actually happened last night. I have a 2-year-old who is adorable and just started really learning how to talk, and he loves to mimic mom and dad. And my husband works outside of the house, and he decided that he was going to grab dad's hat and keys and walk into the living room and declare that he is home. And he did that very cutely. Then he decided to look at us and said, oh, a mess. So he's really copying dad by telling us that the house is a mess when he comes home. And funny thing is, he caused that mess. So I don't know where he gets off telling me it's a mess, because he's the one that did it. So, 2-year-olds are the cutest things, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I love that. That's so funny. Oh, they're so cute. Oh, I love it. So, okay. So, well, tell us about your experience with your eating disorder. And
yeah.
Because it started when you were young. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I am a type 1 diabetic. I have been a diabetic for 25 years. I was diagnosed at the age of 4.
Wow.
And I had a pretty well, like, normal childhood. Diabetes was very well controlled. It was hard to be a teen. I went to the doctor one day and he asked me, are you not taking care of your diabetes because you don't know how, or because you want to lose weight? And I said, lose weight? What is this? So I dove into the deep, deep web and looked up how to lose weight as a diabetic.
Right.
And unfortunately, that's where it kind of began. And then with different life circumstances, unfortunately, my father died at the age of 16. And shortly after, my mother had
a 16.
Massive brain. I was 16 when my dad died, and I was extremely close with him. And then 9 months later, my mom had a brain tumor, which left her at the time completely. She was completely gone, lost a lot of body functions, had to be put in a nursing home. So the fact about losing almost both of your parents in a matter of a year, as well as, again, all the teenage things, being in high school, was just too much to handle. Luckily, my mother came out of it great, and she is fully functioning now.
Is she?
Complete normal human. But at that,
wow.
Yes.
Wow.
By the grace of God, she is doing awesome. But at that time, it was just so much to handle that I needed to be able to control something. And I think a lot of people think eating disorders are just about being thin. And sure, there's a little bit of like the body, like thinking about like the body and the image of your body. But a lot of people, I think, turn to eating disorders as a way to survive or try to survive, like a coping mechanism. And for me, that was a huge coping mechanism. It was a sense of control with my world falling to pieces around me. This was something that I could hold on to.
How do you feel about how you were dealing with your emotions at that time? Because you would have had an explosion of emotions, wouldn't you? And like trying to deal with so much going on.
Absolutely. I think definitely a little bit of like, I don't want to say I threw a pity party for myself, but I definitely felt like, woe is me. This is, why is everything happening to me? Definitely in a, like a depressive state, and also too, like in a state, like if I don't have my parents, what is there like to have? And at such a young age, that's so difficult. And also on top of that, I do have a younger brother, not by much, but still I was forced into that role of taking care of him, and making sure that he was all set and putting my needs behind me. I didn't go to doctor's appointments. I didn't take care of everything I needed to, including, taking my medication, taking my insulin, and then seeing the weight drop as well. I was like, well, you know what? If the weight is dropping, that's one less thing I have to worry about. I can still look a certain way or look put together as I thought I was. Because I think too, a lot of us think that if I'm thin or if I, look a certain way, then that's a sense of happiness that can be achieved. You don't have to worry about the struggle of fitting in clothes or fitting in with your peers. You have the body type, so you can focus on other things. So it was just a lot of emotions. And I think, again, it was a coping mechanism for myself.
Yeah. For people that don't know what bulimia is, I briefly explained it in the beginning. So could you explain it to us further now?
Yeah. So diabulimia is basically when you take less insulin than your body needs. You set your body into a state of ketosis. I know a lot of people are very into the keto nowadays, and it's sort of a form of that, but not real. It's 100 times more dangerous. It's basically turning your body into such a level of acidity that your body breaks down. So you're breaking down fat, but you're also breaking down muscle and tissue, and that's where all the complications come from. And another thing with diabulimia is you can look completely normal on outside there. You don't have to even necessarily binge. I did because it was just another coping mechanism, but you could be eating normally and just not take your insulin for a meal, and you could you can lose weight. I will never forget. I went on I used to weigh myself daily. I went on a binge one night, did not take my insulin. My blood sugars were reading over 500, which is for a normal person.
500, oh my gosh.
And for those who don't know, a normal blood sugar reading for a person with diabetes, you would want to be between 80 and 120. Yeah. It was over 500, probably even higher than that, because the meter only goes up to 600 and it was reading HI. And I weighed myself the next day and I was down 15 pounds. And it happens so fast because your body is just not functioning at all. And it can lead to what they call diabetic ketoacidosis, which I have had more times than I care to admit, where you become hospitalized. Yeah. And you can lose your life from that. You can go into diabetic coma and lose your life. So it's a very scary eating disorder. Not that none of the other eating disorders are scary, but this is a little, can be a little tricky because you're dealing with a chronic illness as well.
Yeah, gosh.
So I suffered with diabulimia for, I want to say 8 to 10 years, because two of the years I was in quasi recovery, I would say. Just again, hospitalization after hospitalization was really, really tough on myself. It was tough on my family. After my mother fully recovered from her brain surgery, she became almost, again, a caregiver for me, always constantly like watching me. And I saw the emotional toll it was on her. For my brother, just the hospitalizations and missing out on events, I was getting tired. I went to university and was just having a horrible time. Couldn't keep my grades up, just couldn't have the energy to even hang out with friends or just do day-to-day activities. I would be laying on the couch because just my body was absolutely falling apart. And I decided to drop out of college.
Sorry, Natalie. So with the diabulimia at that time and the reduction in insulin, so were you doing this? How often would you do this?
So typically for someone, you take a long acting insulin, which is like the background insulin, and a short acting insulin that you take for meals. And right. Someone with diabetes, depending on their carb ratio, can take between 30 and 50 units a day. I would take my long acting insulin in the morning, but I'm supposed to take it twice a day. I would take it in the morning, and then I would take 10 units in the morning of my short acting, and that was it. So I was taking probably a fourth of what I was supposed to be taking. And just so I was just enough, just not sick enough that I could function and stay out of the hospital, which sometimes it didn't work. It was scary to think about how little insulin I was taking, and how it would really just drain my energy. But I dropped out of college, came home, and I remember sitting on the couch one day and just being like, I really messed up. Like I got into my dream school. I was doing my dream degree program, and I couldn't do it because of this eating disorder. And I, you know, didn't have a social life. I saw how distressed my parents were, and I went into my mom's room and I said, "Mom, I need help. I need absolute help." And my mother, the best woman ever, she was, has been so supportive. And she was like, "Well, let's get you help." And I started therapy. I never went to full treatment.
Natalie, did you have any help before whatsoever? Or did you have any therapy or anything?
Nope.
So this was the very
I had
first.
No therapy. So my first ever therapy was when I decided to get help.
Right. And why do you feel that was the right time? How did you know that was the right time to go speak to your mother?
It was the right time. It was just the right time because it was just, again, everything that I had dreamed of was on a platter for me. And because of this eating disorder, I couldn't do any of it. I had to give all of it up. I had everything in the palm of my hands, everything that I wanted. And this eating disorder was like, no. And I was so mad at it that I was like, I can't do it anymore. And when I started recovering, it was probably a year when I was in quasi recovery, I would say, I started noticing complications from the eating disorder. It started with neuropathy, and for those who don't know, neuropathy is basically nerve damage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nerve damage. And it starts in the feet typically. So I lost feeling in the feet and would have shooting and sharp pains, which, you know, led me to, at one point it was so bad that I considered actually getting a wheelchair. I couldn't walk at the grocery store. And it just, as I was in recovery, it just, everything started piling up, all the damages. And it wasn't until my second year of recovery when I started to have eye problems. And I had laser surgery, injections to the eyes. I had surgeries to attach my retina again after my retina detached, which is all part of the disease retinopathy. I lost the vision in my right eye. And when that happened, that is what really set me into full recovery, because I said, going blind is not worth any control, any body I wanted, any kind of image, because if I don't have my sight, I can't do anything that I want. At that time, I did not meet my husband yet. I did not have a child yet. I knew I wanted to start a family. I knew I wanted to start a career of some sort. I knew I wanted to travel. I knew I wanted to be this woman that I couldn't be if I was blind. And not that blind people can't do all those things, but for me, it was something that was very important to me, that I get everything in check. And a thing that's very dangerous about diabetes as well is compare it to like an iceberg. You can see the damage right now, but you don't know the damage in 10, 20 years. Yeah. And I ended up developing, after that, gastroparesis, which is the paralysis and nerve damage of the stomach. And actually, this past Monday, I was just diagnosed with kidney disease. So it's a never-ending thing. And it's just, I was just done with the complications. I wanted to save my body. I wanted a bigger life. And that's when I started full recovery. And I knew that I had to make a change. I had to put myself and my body first.
Yeah. If we can just backtrack a moment. So when you're in the depths of diabulimia, you had mentioned in your notes that what was for you at the time was positive, was that nobody knew that you were doing it and you could eat and you could, everybody thought that you were eating and normally and nothing was askew and nobody knew what you were doing.
Yes, no one knew what I was doing. And at that time, I think everyone was so focused on, you know, my situation that was going on. Everyone wanted to make sure we were okay because of my family and going through what they went through. And it was almost something too, that like, I didn't want to I liked it because I wasn't like bothering anyone with it, where, you know, people would be watching me to see if I was, you know, throwing up or noticing I wasn't eating. No one ever questioned it. And I think it's so funny now that I'm a recovery mentor, and people from my high school and my past friends that I have lost touch with are finding my social media and they're like, Natalie, you had an eating disorder? I knew you were like on the thinner side and like sometimes like, but we just thought it was because of the diabetes, like not because of an eating disorder. And I'm like, no, I was so sick and no one knew. They always considered every time I was sick, it was just because of the diabetes. which it, I mean, technically it was because of the diabetes, but it was because of the eating disorder.
And what did your mother think?
So yeah.
What did your mother think when, you know, the time before you actually went to her and said, you know what, I need help? What was she thinking was going on? Did she know?
She just thought I was, she thought I was just being a college student, like too right. stressed out with Run dealing down. With my own health. She knew I was a little off because, you know, the exercise obsession, the, you know, the always having to, you know, I would still, you know, categorize foods good or bad. I had some like funny things about that, but she never really, she knew I wasn't a, as they say, a well-controlled or good diabetic. I don't like to use the term good diabetic, but she didn't know the severity of it until I literally was like, Mom, I need help. And I had her, oh my goodness, I can't remember off the top of my head. I had her read a book about a woman with diabulimia. And I was like, Mom, this is what I'm going through. I had her read that. And I was like, Mom, I'm struggling. And if you don't really get it, that's okay. But I need you to read this. And she read it. And my mom came to me with tears in her eyes and sobbing. I was like, I had no idea any of this was going on. And again, that was the beauty of this eating disorder, is no one would ever know. No one would ever know. The only person that may could tell would be my endocrinologist because of my A1C being so high. But a lot of the times too, they just thought I was being lazy or not well controlled. So
if people are going through that, you know, if they have followed the same path as you did with the diabulimia, what would you say to them right sure. now from what you've been through?
Yeah. I think a lot of the reasons why a lot of people struggle is they're not as educated about insulin as they need to be. They know that insulin can cause you to lose weight, but they also, they think that insulin, if it causes you to lose weight, then it's going to cause you to gain weight if you take it. And that's not necessarily true. And I think knowing about the insulin is key. I think also too, knowing some of the things that you can expect in recovery, but like the swelling and some issues with blood sugar, but most importantly, the complications are not worth it. You can start right this moment in recovery. We don't have to start for the next day. You don't need to start on Monday. You don't need to start at the new month or the new year. You can make a difference in your health in the future right this moment. And I know it's scary. I know taking your insulin feels so wrong. I know that measuring your blood sugar and seeing that high number makes you feel a certain way, makes it feel negative, but the numbers on the scale, the numbers on your blood sugar meter hold no value other than it's information. It has nothing tied to your worth. It has nothing tied to who you are as a person, who you are as a diabetic, as a brother, a sister, a father, a mother. It is just information. And it's so important that you start taking care of yourself right this second, because you can stop yourself from going blind, from having kidney disease, from having gastroparesis, from yeah. neuropathy, all the things that I have. You can make a difference right this moment by taking your insulin.
Well, so what do you suggest that they would do?
Yeah. So my number one thing that I would suggest is obviously reaching out to someone to get help. If you don't know how, you know, there are plenty of resources for diabulimia. I can share with you that as well. But reaching out to your endocrinologist. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't recognize diabulimia as an eating disorder or don't even know about it or understand. But even just tell your endocrinologist, let them know that you're struggling with taking your insulin, and say that you're having some mental health issues as well with it, and they can at least guide you in the right way. And to also to once you start with that is taking it slow. I think a lot of people get so hooked on, you know, I have diabetes. I need to do everything correctly. I need to carb count. I need to measure my blood sugar. I need to take my insulin. I need to exercise. I need to do this complete 180 in a matter of day and night. I don't find that to be successful. I feel, at least in my coaching, I really preach take it slow and really master the habits, as such as mastering one meal a day. And I think that's in a lot of eating disorders, recovery programs as well, as mastering one thing at a time. You don't have to be perfect, but making sure you at least get insulin in for one meal. And then after you master that, where you feel confident, you can move on to the next. You don't have to do everything all at once. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost in recovery, especially with diabetes, because you're managing not only the eating disorder, but the chronic illness. And it gets to be so overwhelming that if you mess up or you get frustrated, you give up, and you don't have to give up. So
yeah. Absolutely.
Take it slow.
And it's taking it just step by step and what you can manage at that time. And if it's just, you know, just
exactly
having that once a day, you know, making sure that you get the right insulin, that just that once a day, and then you can take it from there and build on that. It's creating that new positive habit, but working with all those other negative feelings surrounding that. But it's just doing what you can to begin to change positively.
Absolutely. And keeping it basic too. There's a lot of things within diabetes that, you know, people focus on. You know, there's a thing called pre-bolusing, which is taking your insulin off you like 15 to 20 minutes before to delay spikes. And then there's different ways of eating to help to, like, just as for recovery circumstances, I don't even keep it simple. At least get that insulin in your body. We can worry about that later. Just, I know there's so much when it comes to diabetes and management, but taking the insulin is the biggest thing. And that's what you need to concentrate on at this moment when you're in recovery. So.
And then what would be the next steps, would you suggest?
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, after you make sure that you know, start taking your insulin, it's really focusing on healing your relationship with food. There's, you know, there's a huge movement right now, which is so awesome, which is the anti-diet culture and the body positivity. We are in a whole different era than what I grew up in, where we are seeing more, you know, mid-sized plus size women. And we are learning that, you know, the things that we grew up on, you know, aren't necessarily correct. And I think that's awesome. So making sure we really focus on healing our relationship with food and movement and really working on mindset and the way we talk to ourselves. It's a process. And again, it's not going to happen in a week or in a month. It's a whole thing. And that's something I preach to my ladies is, it takes time and there's a lot to learn, but again, healing the relationship with yourself, with diabetes, with food, with exercise, it's a whole journey. And it's, again, it sounds overwhelming, but once you get to a certain point, it's so beautiful. it's almost like the sun finally comes out and you just see the world differently. And when I watch these breakthroughs with some of my clients, it's absolutely fantastic. I will never forget. I had one client, and even something that I went through myself. Pizza is very feared in the diabetes community because it with the sugars and the sauce and the carb with the crust. And she messaged me and she said, "Natalie, I ate pizza today, and I tested and measured my blood sugar and it was a little bit on the higher side, but I didn't get upset and I didn't care how many calories was in it. And I just, I took the insulin." That is such to hear that and to even have that experience myself as I've come to not fear certain foods, it is so beautiful and it's so worth it. There's so much more to life. There really is than the eating disorder. And once you get to that point, it's heavenly to say the least.
Yeah. What a point to get to. After you'd had, so you had a year of intense therapy.
Yes.
And then what happened? What did you do after that?
So honestly, I took it, I did intense therapy for 2 years, and then I moved, and actually I stopped therapy. And again, I don't necessarily recommend this route to people, but I kind of did recovery on my own. But I had a different circumstance than most people. I was forced into recovery a little bit because of my complications. I was so fearful of the complications. But I kind of had a whole process with it. I did get into like exercise and, different ways of eating and tracking. But it wasn't until I had a coach, I hired a coach on my own who, really was focused.
What sort of coach?
So she primarily was a weight loss coach, but focused on mindset. And I told her my background, and she was the one that was like, first she's like, we're not focusing on weight loss, like not with your background, and which I was fine with. I was fine with my body at the time. I more wanted to get stronger. And that was my main focus in hiring her, was to get stronger. But she was the one that taught me about mindset and changing the way I spoke to myself and changing the way I saw food. And she was the one really who helped me on my journey with healing my relationship with food and movement. And her teaching me these things was my biggest light switch. I think therapy was great, and it really dug into my past issues, especially like with losing my father. But it was me seeing that there didn't have to be good or bad foods, that I could literally eat anything I wanted to, and it still was nourishing. Maybe yeah. some foods yeah. were less nourishing than others, but food is food, and food is meant to be enjoyed. And so is exercise. And there's so much more to exercise than to lose weight. There's the you time, the listening to music, the endorphins, everything about that, like just changing the way you talk to yourself. She said something that was huge to me that I would love to share with you guys.
Yeah.
Is she asked me one day, how's my thoughts been? I was like, I've been kind of beating myself up. I've been saying this, this, and that. And she goes, Nellie, would you be comfortable, saying what you say to yourself to your mother or to your friend or to a cousin or a sister? And I thought about it and I said, no, absolutely not. I would never say what I say to myself, to them. And she goes, Lynn, why are you verbally abusing yourself like that? And I go, verbally abusing? And I was like, oh my gosh, I really am. And she was telling me, what you say to yourself is what you start to believe, and what then that kind of becomes your world. And you start, even though you see a bunch of things, you start cherry picking those negative things. And when you start talking to yourself kindly, giving yourself grace, and even if like your world just starts opening up and you start believing in yourself and you start really being able to push yourself forward to stay in recovery, to really, move forward in your health goals. And that to me was mind blowing.
Majority of people, they're not aware about that they have this voice in their head. They don't really, because we don't actually ever really consciously talk about that. So even though people have it there, they don't really understand that they could do something to, first of all, be aware of that they're talking negatively to themselves. And then they could batter that voice away and replace it with something positive. It's being aware that you have that negative voice, telling it to stop, to get lost, and then replacing it with a positive affirmation or a positive phrase or something is going to help to A, to like help you to feel calmer and better about yourself, but also it's like you say, working with those beliefs and those negative beliefs that you have about yourself and starting to gradually begin to change those.
100%. And again, that was major for me, and her helping me through these mindset changes in the different ways I could see diabetes and all these things around me and all these struggles that I was going through. I felt very, very inspired by her. And I was like, I know so many diabetics and so many women in my community who struggle with this, even if it's not a full blown eating disorder, maybe it's just an unhealthy relationship with food or exercise, who need to start thinking like this. And that's where I kind of brings me into what I, you know, do today. You know, I became certified in mindset and health coaching, and I am now working with the organization We Are Diabetes. I'm going to be becoming a certified recovery coach fully, specializing in diabulimia. So it is a full turnaround, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I think I struggled I struggled for a reason, and I struggled for that reason so I can help others. And so I can help, at least if I help one person not have a complication and start living their life, I've done my life's mission. Yeah. I am a happy, happy woman. I struggled. It's been heartbreaking. I would do it all again. I would do it all again to be where I'm at today. 100%. So it's great.
You know, for the people listening, would you be setting up a private practice? You know, if they were to be able to, would they be able to access you online?
Yeah. So at the moment I am on Instagram as type balanced _. And I'm also doing Facebook groups, where I have a Facebook group called the Balanced Diabetic Community, and where it is a fantastic place where it is a very safe and small community, but we do live trainings about recovery. We do a lot of support, but it's all free, because I know a lot of people aren't completely ready to do therapy, aren't completely to go into treatment, but like may want to, you know, start kind of like testing the waters. And I just want to be able to support and help everyone, no matter your financials. And also I'm waiting a little bit until I am fully certified to start taking one-on-one clients for full recovery, until recovery coaching. But right now, again, there's a lot of information on my Instagram and with the Facebook group. I actually do live trainings every Wednesday, and today we are talking about recovery and some of the lesser known recovery facts and things you may expect that no one has told you, especially with diabetes.
Every Wednesday at what time?
Every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. I do live trainings. They're between 15 minutes and a half hour. And I kind of base it on, you know, the temperature of the group. I'm in there almost every single day talking to women. It is primarily women, but if you're a man, come on in too. You know, I kind of see what they're struggling with, what questions they have, what they want to know more about. And it's really, again, it's a free community with free resources. You tell me you're struggling with A, B, and C, I will get you the answers. I will, you know, do my best to help you. And if we need to take it to a higher level, I will put you in the right spots. I've helped a handful of women go into treatment and, you know, find therapists and whatnot too. I kind of a liaison right now, just to, you know, get people in the door to start living and, you know, learning about recovery. So
Yeah. And Natalie, so when will you have finished and be fully qualified?
September of 2021. So.
Oh, soon.
Very soon. Yes.
Soon. Oh, I love it. That's good. Yes. That's very great. Soon.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was the name again of your Facebook group?
So it's the Balanced Diabetic. Again, I post frequently, kind of more fun stuff, but on Instagram as well, a lot of, you know, posts and interactive stories. And I try to bring a lighter side to recovery. A lot of times recovery can feel very dark and daunting, but there can be a little humor, light to it.
What I say about these podcasts. That's what I say about doing the podcast, because it's like it's such a difficult area, but also we want to try and keep it a little light. Tell me how your health is now.
Yeah. So I have to be honest, I feel the best I have ever felt years, even with a 2-year-old that wakes me up constantly. overall, my health is pretty stable. Like I mentioned a little earlier, just this past week, I was diagnosed with kidney disease. So that's a new venture I'm taking on, and going to be trying to manage. Luckily it's in early stages, so I believe we're okay for now. other than that, all complications, are pretty well controlled. The gastroparesis, I do have flare ups every once in a while, but again, diet is huge with that, keeping that in control. But life is good. Recovery is worth it. Let me tell you.
Yes,
overall,
it is. So. Yeah. Oh gosh. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sure it'll help so many people.
Thank you.
Listen to this. Because there isn't enough information, I believe, particularly in the UK here about this. You know, people don't really know what it is.
Yeah. You know, bringing awareness to diabulimia is, you know, something that is very near and dear to my heart. A lot of people don't know it. And a lot of people struggle because, unfortunately, the medical community doesn't know a lot about it. So they don't really know how to help us. And a lot of treatment facilities don't know how to handle it either. So bringing awareness to it is very important. So I'm so honored that you had me on the podcast so I could shed some light, and hopefully, you know, someone out there is listening and, you know, may think that they have, that if they have diabulimia, now they know about it. So,
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. We're honored to have you on the show, Natalie.
Yeah, this is great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So that's all for today's episode of Bulimia Sucks. So thank you for listening. And thank you for joining Natalie and us and I today. And to Natalie for sharing your incredible journey. So make sure you join us again on the next episode of Bulimia Sucks, and make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple iTunes so you never miss an episode. Plus, if you haven't already heard about it, check out my book, Bulimia Sucks, on Amazon to learn many different techniques to help you to begin to break through your painful bulimic behaviors. And before we go, let us know what you think of the show and show some love your favorite podcast by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. And then come and join us on our Facebook page, Bulimia Sucks, as well. And of course, with Natalie's Facebook page. And we will leave the links below so you can find her and Bulimia Sucks on Facebook. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.
Bulimia Sucks, but you don't. Kate has just released a new best-selling book called Anxiety Hacks, with proven techniques, tools, and tips to calmness. Check it out now on Amazon.